What we're talking about today, Stephen, in the world of marketing?
We're going to talk about brand. Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Hi.
Hi, mate. Are you all right?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah. Just getting used to lockdown more and more, to be honest. I know we're not in lockdown anymore, are we, really?
But I don't know if it's cancelled. I've not heard officially words, although people's actions would say otherwise.
Well, no, because we have that Nando's chicken scale now in the green to the red.
Right.
Didn't we move down to three? Aren't we alert level three now or something like that?
Out of what?
Five.
Well, that's still...
So we're middle. So we're half lockdown, half not.
Great. Basically. Useful. That's the most useful rating.
Did you see the one the other day? Did you see... this takes us back to the last podcast on government and their marketing efforts. Did you see the air bridges, which has got a traffic light system? So if you travel to a different country and then you fly back, if you have to be quarantined or not for 14 days. So they've got a traffic light system of red, amber, green. Red means that you have to be quarantined. So there are certain countries that are classed as red countries.
Right.
Amber countries mean that you can come back, but you don't have to be quarantined, as does green. So if amber and green are the same thing, what's the point in having a traffic light system?
I don't know.
It's either yes or no, isn't it?
Yeah. People like the middle ground. You see, when I do, welcome to the Corona cast, people, by the way. It's not that, just so you know. When I do like any kind of ratings, my favourite rule is to remove number 7. Or if it's out of 5, remove the 3, because people have to give you a definite answer. Because humans like the middle, right? Which is like the worst quality feedback you can ever have. Yeah, it's all right. It's useless. Like, just go home.
Completely useless.
You can't take action. If they really love it, awesome. If they really hate it, good.
It's like all those surveys you get through that's like from 1 to 10, agree to strongly disagree.
Yeah.
Top it. Everybody just, nobody ever goes on 1 or 10 unless they've had a really bad or a really good service.
Yeah.
And apart from that, everybody's gonna go for a 3 or a 4 or a 6 or a 7.
Yeah. If it's 1 to 10, the rule is remove 7. If it's 1 to 5, remove 3. Like, you can't do it. You have to get off the fence, people.
So we've turned from you're now turning into Carol Vorderman with your numbers and figures.
Yes. And
we're covering every demographic for this podcast that we can.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. I am a bit Carol Vorderman, apart from the talent with numbers and figures and stuff.
Fair. You're probably 20 years younger then, but still look older.
And the enhancements. The new enhancements that she has. Anyway, before we get down the slippery slope of that, what we're talking about today, Stephen, in the world of marketing?
We're going to talk about brand.
Okay.
It's interesting, isn't it? The amount of time you hear the word brand this, brand that, but what does brand actually mean?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people outside of marketing jump to brand as being a logo or a visual identity. But us as marketers have a completely different viewpoint of what a brand should be. And I also agree, I also think that we have discrepancies between marketers of what we think brand is.
Got you. Well, we had this one of the two previous episodes. I can't remember which one, which is quite bad. We've only had two that we've done.
But first episode, I think.
But brand also has an identity problem, like marketing, right? With marketing, we confirmed it was the home of the customer, right? The voice of the customer as a solution. Yes. Now, my my mate, Matt Davis, who is king of brand, and has a lovely beard, has a really nice definition of brand. He says, brand is the meaning that people attach to your products and services, to the thing you'll do, right? And branding is the management of that meaning, right?
A good definition.
It is a good definition, which makes a lot of sense, right? So what is confusing, I think, for marketing people and brand people and just people is the relationship between brand and marketing. Like, is marketing, does marketing own brand? Is brand separate than marketing? What is the relationship to those people? I think a lot of people swap out those meanings and swap them around willy-nilly also. Do you know what I mean? They'll interchange brand and marketing without really considering the depth of the meaning of it. So I think brand for me is the stuff that connects all the actions and the people. It's the thing you create as a result of doing some marketing actions, right? So in terms of good words like differentiation and distinctiveness and positioning, right, is all kind of brand words, but the activity of making them and implementing them and telling them to the customer, to people outside or any stakeholders really, is marketing. I don't think that should be owned by anybody. I think we talked about bits of marketing being specialisms.
Yeah, completely.
I think brand should be a specialism because you need a different mindset. Like marketing.
I think it already is a specialism in a lot of places. I think brand is, you're completely right what you're saying. The problem is that we as marketers, we're always segmenting things, but actually we're all part of brand.
Yeah.
And I think we try to overcomplicate going by this should be separate, that should be separate. Yeah. Brand should be looked after and it should be held accountable. But I think everybody should work towards an under brand, if that makes sense.
I really liked that analogy, right? So there's a guy, an Australian guy called Adam Ferrier.
Yes, I've heard of Adam Ferrier.
Who I came across at the Ogilvy Nudge Stock Festival earlier this year, online, obviously, safety first, who has a really, really cool-named agency called Thinkabell, which is probably the greatest agency name I've ever come across. And a really interesting perspective of we should stop focusing on the customer. Right. And he's one of five consumer psychologists on the planet. Right. He's a smart, he's not just come
a,
up.
A what? A consumer psychologist?
Yeah, yeah. Like a real, like a professional at it.
That's quite a cool niche that he's drove out there.
It is, right. And he came across, right. I've seen him do a few things, and I might put it in the show notes, maybe a link to a recent webcast that he's done, where he's on about category, right? So the category is, for example, drinks, right? People want a drink because they're thirsty, right? And then they choose a brand. So instead of people going, oh, I want a Starbucks, I don't really, I want a coffee. I agree, and I think that's you that reminded me of what you just said in terms of marketing, right? You go, oh, I'm a marketer, when actually what you're doing is building brand.
Yeah,
you have some other KPIs like conversions and stuff like that, right? But actually the category is brand, right? The umbrella is brand. The umbrella is drink. The umbrella is snack food. Do you know what I mean? It's that. And he says companies and people in his agency Thinkabell, and a lot of his talks are about this, is that the power of people marketing and branding to the category or creating their own category. And then once people are aware of you in the category, once you're an option, right, you can work to get people to choose you. But first you have to be in the category, which I think is...
Well, that's easy enough with a product, isn't it? You know, you're creating a new...
A service kind of thing.
Yeah. If you're making a new beverage, for example, if you're going to make a new Coke or a Pepsi... So let's bring back Roller Cola.
No,
you know,
man.
You are going to be... Or Cresta Lemonade. If you're ever going to bring... If you brought that back, you're going to be in the same marketplace.
Panda
but
Pops. Beautiful. I love Panda.
Panda Pops. Yeah, do you remember the blueberry one that used to make your tongue go blue?
Yeah. Sorry, American people, if you're listening in the future.
Yeah, we really apologise. But what makes people pick up Coca-Cola over a Cresta Lemonade or a Roller Cola or even over a Pepsi? See, for me, I drink Diet Coke, but I don't. I actually drink Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, because I prefer it. But yet, I still call a Diet Pepsi a Diet Coke, which means Diet Coke have the brand.
Well, this is what happens in pubs, right? If you order a Diet Coke in a pub, like, you order a Diet Coke, people order a Diet Coke, and then they go, is Pepsi all right? And you go, yeah, because you don't really care.
Yeah, you don't care.
You really don't care. You just want the category. You want a drink, please. Like, yeah. It's not... I'm sure there is people, don't like scroll or the.
Yeah, I know people who will only drink Coca-Cola because of the taste. But for me, it's just serving a purpose.
Yeah.
It's quenching my thirst, or it's giving me that sugary hit, or whatever it is.
You can, oh my God. They're Coca-Cola is a great example of a brand, the one that is used a lot, because I was going to say that it's like coffee in Starbucks, right? If you want a coffee, you're a takeout coffee in a shopping center, and on floor four at the back is a Starbucks, which would be, you want the Starbucks, but next to you, in front of you, is a Nero's or a Costa. Are you really going to Starbucks? I know some people will, right? I know some people will, just because.
For me, though, that's you know, where we all as marketers want to get to, which is that becomes brand loyalty. Mm. That's not about brand so much, that's just brand loyalty, which is a different step on from brand for me. It's part of brand, but it's when people become infatuated with what it is you are or what you do.
And you can manage that meaning, like harping back to Matt's stuff, right? You can manage what that meaning is. I will put the growth or the facilitation or the manipulation of loyalty or customers and making real fans, making people choose to walk to level four of the shopping centre, right, is part of branding, the management of that meaning, right? Because you're aware that there's, if you want a coffee in a shopping centre, you've probably got three options, bar some independent ones.
Yes, yeah.
Right, and we know those brands, right? It's choosing those and then taking action on that choice. Like in the pub, if you go, I want a Diet Coke, and they go, it's Pepsi, is that all right? You probably still choose to have a drink. Do you know what I mean? Probably.
I would have thought so, otherwise you wouldn't be. Yeah.
But then I think it's that interesting choice. But Coke's a great example, right? Because their strategy back in, it's one of the oldest marketing strategies I know of, right? I can't remember how many decades it is, but it is definitely decades, right? They decided their strategy was to get people to drink more Coke. And to do that, they positioned themselves with people being happy. They wanted to create FOMO of people looking at a scene going, oh yeah, look how happy they are drinking Coke, or associate happiness with Coke. And then was born a bunch of tactics of how to do adverts that tell that story, right? The biggest one, and the one still today working, is the Christmas Coca-Cola ad, right? Which I think we made in the previous ones, right? That kind of depth of brand is telling that kind of brand story or positioning them and differentiating them against Pepsi. Because Pepsi.
But the thing is, they, you know, you're completely right. When you look at Coke, they nailed it, you know, 40, 50 years ago and are still delivering the same thing.
Yep.
Which proves that they knew what they were doing.
I mean, we talked about long-termism a little bit in an earlier episode as well, right? And that's long, isn't it? I'm sitting here trying to remember a Pepsi ad, and I think I can remember skateboards.
Yeah, from the 80s.
I can't really remember anything else, if I'm honest. I can remember most Coke ads, like the lorry one and the... There was a Diet Coke one where he poured it over him in a... Like, a guy poured Coke over him, didn't he? Anyway.
Who knows,
right? But
what's really good, what's really interesting, though, is around brand is actually that sugary drink market is probably one of the leaders of any sector in what brand means. So if you think about Coke, Pepsi, all those different alternatives, but when you look at people like Red Bull, for example, who have completely carved out their own market in energy drinks, which Coke can't even keep up with, and the different marketing tactics they've had as a company, and the high-led sponsorship that they do, which, you know, all around high-octane sports and all those niche sports that not many people usually go into. You know, you're not really going to get a professional career as a snowboarder or a skateboarder or jumping out of a space shuttle as Baumgartner did a few years back, you know, on the Red Bull space mission.
Yeah.
On the biggest skydive ever. You can carve out something completely different but still be in the same market, and that's why brand's so important.
Yeah, so the category is the category, right? The category exists, right? And to win in a category, you need several ingredients, right? You need differentiation, I would say distinctiveness and positioning, which Red Bull 100% do, right?
Yeah.
100% do. They are... Whether you like it or not. In fact, I think most people think it's terrible. I'm sure I've seen a study of where people go, actually, I don't like it, but I just really like the brand.
That's because everybody drank it in the late 90s, early 2000s with a lot of vodka, then was physically sick off it. And then as soon as you're physically sick off Red Bull, when you smell it, it takes you back to that time.
Ah, right. Maybe that's it. What a weird brand association that is. But it's really weird. But the recipe, right? The stuff they're doing is classic brand. And I think, although we've used the examples that everybody knows there that are consumer products, because it's easier. Yes. Right? It's easier people to understand the lesson that we use in consumer products.
But it gives everybody to it. The reason we've talked about those realistically is because everybody's heard of them.
Yeah.
It's very easy to have our common denominator in brands that everybody recognises.
So would you for people out there going, and I know these because I've had them in workshops and talks and as clients, there's people going, well, that doesn't work for us because I'm B2B, right? I'm under the impression, feel free to challenge if not, that brand lessons and good marketing lessons are easily transferred between consumer and B2B, right? There's not a lot of difference in there. There's only the context of message and product and stuff like that is obviously different. The context is slightly different, but the stuff we've talked about with Red Bull there, differentiation, distinctiveness and positioning, is exactly the same in a B2B market.
Yeah, I won't be challenging that because you're completely right. For me, it doesn't matter if it's B2B, B2C, that's everybody starting to segment and going, oh, I only talk to businesses. You're not talking to businesses. The business is purchasing, but you've somebody's got to buy you, and it's one person or it's a group of people. It's an executive board at a company. You're actually selling to people.
Yeah.
And now I've seen, you know, the new one's B2B2B2C. You know, and I'm going, stop overcomplicating it. It's what we've talked about for years, which is it's people doing business with people. It doesn't matter if it's an organization, it doesn't matter if it's a single person. It is one person talking to another, getting them to like their product or service or their brand, and somebody saying, yes, I want to work with you.
If we take our minds back a few years to when we were customer journey design folks, right? Yeah. In that simple structure of awareness, consideration, purchase, retention, yeah, maximization, right? The bit that differs in a business, because the context is different and there's usually more stakeholders. Like if I want to buy a drink, like I'm not conferring, if I'm honest.
Yeah, you're just going to go and do it.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
In fact, that will go for most stuff in Tim Elliott's personal life, not connected with business. I'm not conferring.
I have to ask my wife every time.
Oh dear. Well,
but yeah.
But in business, the consideration and the purchase cycle can be different and can involve multiple stakeholders.
Oh, massively.
It involves more justifications. Do you know what I mean? There's probably budgets, there's probably things, but that's just context, right?
So when you look at that journey, when in that consideration phase, if you're buying a low-level priced product, if it's a drink, for example, it's low risk anyway, so you're just going to go and buy it. Even if you don't like it, you might go, that's horrible, but you won't be annoyed that you just wasted 80p or a pound. If you bought a bottle of wine at £10, you might be slightly annoyed, but you wouldn't, you know, be looking to go back to get a refund on it, for example. When you start talking large products and services, anything, I personally, you can see it starting to happen across a lot of organizations now, their purchase level is reducing throughout their chain. So people are now only got £250 to sign off on budgets, or 500, whereas before it used to be 1,000, 10,000. It always used to be £9,999 in a lot of places, but that's heavily reducing. What happens when you get to that purchase level, or get even close to that purchase level, people become worried and concerned and feel like they have to bring in other people onto the conversation to prove their understanding of what they're purchasing. So that consideration phase just blows back out again back to an awareness piece. So it's a second round of awareness with a new group of stakeholders. Yeah. And that's the difference in B2B, is you've got to bring somebody in to purchase, get them to a point of purchase, then get them to become your ambassador to everybody else inside that organization, so they get bought into becoming an ambassador of what you're doing.
I think one of the best tools, the best methods to align people, because you do sweeping generalization again, you do have to align multiple stakeholders in a business selling purchase brand thing, right? Yeah. There's still the core sort of thing. There's still the core mission, the story, the problem it solves, the cause it does, the thing it does, right? That should carry on past everybody. But you need to understand you're telling a story to a cross-functional team. It will probably go past the CFO, right? A finance guy or girl.
Yeah.
It will probably...
You've got to make sure that their challenge, you know... It's really interesting you brought up stories, because stories is one of the most important things. And I know it's really hot in the market at the moment, and a lot of people are talking about storytelling and something of it. They're not going to go away, and they've been around for years, absolutely years. You've got to understand what the pain points of each of those decision makers are, though. So when you talk of a CFO, they will have a different pain point that needs answering compared to somebody inside the marketing division. And your story has got to be able to talk to individuals to ensure that they're bought into what you're doing.
Yeah. And I with story, when I do storytelling work, like commercial storytelling work to help business people think like that, right? To help change their mindsets a bit. There's always kind of three formats of story I like to say, right? There's the conversational one, which is usually your first point of call, right? You've got to be able to pitch or converse or get through a gatekeeper of that telling of story, what it's for. Get a, you know, done by a salesman, let's say, a voice channel. Right, you need to have a conversational way of telling that story and getting it across. Then you need like a detailed version. Like some people, like the operational people, the finance people, want like a Bible, like a manual of how this thing is going to work and what's going to happen. They need the devil is in the detail for those people. Do you know what I mean? They need to know that everything is it, because they're going to be A, responsible for the spend, or responsible for using it, by implementing the thing. Like, it's their job, the operational people, to do the work. And then CEOs and leaders are often big idea people, right? So they want the big picture. They're not super detailed of how it's going to integrate with their current CRM, but they want the long-term, the brand, the nugget, the purpose bit of the story, right? They want to be bought in that this thing, this idea that you have, is going to facilitate or expedite their long-term goal, their purpose, their journey, their direction, right? And it's the same story. It's just a slightly different format to appeal to the multiple stakeholders, right? The core of the story, the kernel of that story, is the same. It's just the stuff around it, the way you tell it, the format it's in.
And that comes down to marketing tactics.
See, that's communications, isn't it, technically?
Exactly.
And maybe, and probably design nowadays. Like there's...
Yeah, very much so. I think design is a massive part of marketing that, you know, we don't overlook, but we probably bring it in a little bit too late.
If we're reusing the distinctiveness and differentiation words from earlier, right, in this case, right, if you, those two words need to be, you can be distinctive and you can differentiate if you're an accountant, right? Accountants are accountants. You can go to any accountant on the planet. They offer the same core services pretty much, right? You can get your management accounts, you can get your tax return, etc., etc. Right, accountants do accountancy work, right? But then you've got ones like Cooper Parry, who are near me, right, who are massively distinctive and differentiated than other accountants, right? And then
I think Cooper Parry became who they are, though, because they were differentiating at the time, or do you think they've just grown to differentiation?
I think they were always a traditional one for until maybe a decade ago, if I'm honest. Okay. Not too long ago. I think the transformation was either capped or driven by their current CEO, Aid Cheatham, who's a good guy. But if you check Google Cooper Parry, people on the outside, if you're not aware, and then try and forget that they're an accountant and try and find something about it. It's all about brand. It's all about story. It's all about people. People know what accountancy does. Right, we've covered this in an earlier one as well. They're not going, hey, use us for accountancy, do this, because people know what accountancy does, especially their level of crime. They're telling a brand story, they're branding, they're managing the meaning that people attach to them. They're trying their best, like Coca-Cola, to be the chosen brand out of the category.
Yes. Yeah, they're elevating themselves to be the differentiated accountant, even though it's still the same core service.
Yeah, it's not, you know, there's hundreds, right? Like plumbers. There's one every town, isn't there? Or four.
I think this is the thing, though. So, you know, it's very easy to talk about large brands and it's very easy to talk about all these different things. Big organisations, it might not be. It might be a sole trader thinking, how the hell do I take some of this and build it into my own business? What would you recommend to them?
I think it's I think that there's always a bit missing, right? The 99% of time, 99% of companies I work for, there's a bit missing of they don't see the whole big picture, right? They don't really understand the market or the category they're in, you know, and or haven't, maybe not that, but they haven't taken the time to look at it. They're assuming that they're in, they know what they're doing and they're in this thing, right? And I think doing that, taking a step back and having a wider picture of the market or the category you're in allows you to make better decisions that differentiate and distinctivize. I don't know. Make
I don't know if that's a word. I don't know if that's a word, but it's all right.
Make it more distinctive, right? And give you the ability to position yourself in the market. It doesn't matter, right? You can do positioning, a good position, and backed up by communicating that in a strong proposition, which will come over to you in a second, is easy if you take a step back, right? It's easy if you're a one-man band.
Yeah, I think it's easier.
It can be used, and it's used beautifully by Coca-Cola and Red Bull. And then Cooper Parry, who are, you know, not a small company, turnover 150 million, 200 million, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful, right? And individual people, right? If you're a plumber in a town with seven other plumbers whose customers are still angry cold people,
yes.
Right, what can you do? What can you do to differentiate yourself? How can you be distinctive? Have you
It comes down to the same rules, doesn't it? The rules don't change. Yeah. Your tactics might, but your rules don't change.
Yeah.
You've got to understand, goes back to what we created all those years ago, and it goes back to understand your purpose, understand the people that you want to talk to, position yourself and understand your competitors in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Build your value proposition. What is your promise to your customer?
Yeah.
What is the value they're going to get created from you? And then plan the hell out of it.
Yeah. How do you get that proposition to the people you've chosen to serve? Right.
And how do you tell them a message that you created in the first place, which is your purpose? Because if your purpose is not flowing through, you're just like another company trying to make money. And People don't buy that at all.
No, that whole thing, right? Like, even if you are, I'm going to stick with the plumber analogy because it's kind of normal. And we all know what it is. But there's a great, I think it's a Simon Sinek quote that great brands give people something to buy into, not just buy from.
Yes.
Right. And completely. We all know, coming back to brand, right? The result of doing that process that Steve just said from going purposed, people, position, proposition, planning, right? Those five P's, that journey will have multiple results. Some people will buy off you, right? Buy a sale is a result of doing all that stuff well, as is brand awareness, as is brand loyalty, as is remarkability, as is affinity and resonance and the ability for customers to go, I had a wicked plumber in the other day. Right, it was in, out, it cleaned up after me. I was proper angry and cold. He made me happy and warm. Times are good.
What a brilliant name for a plumbing company, happy and warm.
Happy and warm. And they had a van that looked like a pineapple.
SpongeBob came round.
Right, what does, like, it's the same stuff, right? It's the same stuff. He did these sort of things. Right, and that's what he proved what he said was true. He said in his proposition that he can make you happy and warm again when you're angry and cold.
Yeah.
Right? And he did. He delivered the experience, right? He communicated that, he marketed out, he put it on his van, and then he delivered an experience that proved that to be true. And ergo, these ladies will now call Crazy Pineapple happy and warm guy when they're angry and cold again. And they'll tell their friends about Crazy Pineapple, angry and warm, happy and warm plumber guy, right? It's like, I don't know if people Google plumbers. I always ask people, I ring somebody and go, you don't know plumber, do you?
I think it's got To be honest, I used to be involved in the construction trade years ago, but I have a guy who I know plumbing, you know, so I just ring him because I know he's not going to rip me off.
This is it.
Well, trust. Honestly, I've been looking for a good joiner for the last 3 months, I'd say, and everybody who I've inquired with through recommendations off Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever, they've all gone, I'm that busy. Can I get in touch with you in 2 or 3 weeks? And at that point, I'm just like, do you know what? I'm not bothered then. If you can't even be bothered to take that inquiry now and you don't ring me back in 2 to 3 weeks, and I know you're not bothered as a company. And they're even though they're sole traders and they don't work as an organization, that's hurting their personal brand for me. Now, that's not, you know, I'm not putting that out there to everybody else who I know, but for me, those people, I can't trust them already to do what they say they're going to do.
But that's that your one experience, although you're not, you know, you're not gone on spotted Nottingham and stuck it in a Facebook group, right?
No.
If that's happened to you, it's not personal, right? He's done it to 4 other people who've called that week.
For me, I think so, yeah. But that's the first thing that jumps into my head as, you know, in the game that we're in, the first thing I'm doing is I'm analysing them as a person and how they're treating people. So it's all well and good. Don't jump on a post where I've said I need a joiner and say, I'm a joiner, can I help? And then me say, oh, this is what needs doing. Oh, I'm really busy, can I get back in 2 or 3 weeks? So you're proving to me you don't want to do the work. And it's not even a horrible job. You know, it's quite a nice job.
And I would, like going back to Matt Davis's thing, right? Branding is the meaning that people attach to you in the products and your service that you do,
yeah.
Right?
I think there's two things.
You've attached something, right?
I've attached something completely.
Like the first impression, right? The first impression, if you can prove what you say in your marketing and your branding to be true, right? Amazing. You've got a really good job. But if you don't, like the case of Steve here, right? Reworking, like combating that negative association, I reckon is super difficult compared to making a good association.
Yes.
Right? Reversing that. Getting Steve now to go, actually, I will use that guy who was a bit of a douche, right? It's super difficult, right? So you all have...
It would take a lot to turn that person for me to use them.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't even come down to price now. It just comes down to core values.
You all have the ability to... Well, you don't have the ability to brand yourselves because that's the meaning somebody else is attached to you, but you need to manage that meaning. That's your job, right? In brand.
But as soon as you are a sole trader, it doesn't matter if you have a company name or you're going out as by yourself, you are still you.
Yeah.
And every action that you take is your brand.
If people had, like a normal across an organization, right? Brands work better when everybody knows what there is, what their brand is that they're working for, even if they're employed, right? Right. If everybody had in their onboarding or HR or regularly told that this is our brand, this is what's important to us, and amongst all of your daily tasks and things you have to do as your job of work, right? It's your job to deliver on these brand promises, these values, these things, right?
You touched on something really important that I was going to bring up, because I think, especially inside organisations and away from the sole traders but even small businesses, brand for me is only ever true if it drives your culture internally.
Yeah. Well, Adam Ferrier, bringing him back into it, in the same talk, I think at Nudgestock, did a great equation. I love a little equation. I love a thing that simplifies a big product, right?
Yeah.
And his equation is BX before EX before CX. So brand experience before employee experience before customer experience, right? In that. in that remit. So brand experience is everything. Every single thing that touches your brand touches your business, right? The brand experience is a result of how good that is in culmination.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But to deliver a good brand experience, for you to manage that meaning, right, you have to have the employees who deliver a good experience to the customers, because employees deliver good customer experience. So if your employees aren't aligned, they aren't bought in, they aren't educated, they don't understand the value of the brand promises, values, mission, purpose, then they're not going to deliver the customer experience that you promised.
But even that's changing now. You know, we look back, I was having this discussion last night with somebody actually, around culture and values. Gen Z and millennials are now wanting to work for purpose-driven companies and organizations. So they will be asking the question of brand before they even apply for a role now. You know, they will be sitting there going, or if you're wanting to work with a brand, you will look at that brand's values before you even approach them to say, oh, we'll do this. Because you want to have partnerships, or you want to be employed by only brands that resonate with you.
I think
all through this whole COVID thing that's just happened, I saw a report 2 days ago that stated the most asked question at interviews at this current time. So when an employer goes, "Oh, have you got any questions?" to the interviewee question of choice at the moment is, how did you treat your staff during COVID-19? So did you put them on furlough? How many redundancies did you make? All those different things, because that shows your true brand. That shows exactly what type of company you are. That's not showing your true brand, your true culture, which seeps through.
Yeah, I think, yes, the younger, newer generations are more self-aware in that space, but I think people are coming into that now as well. Like, I know, again, to hop back to Cooper Parry, I know like good high-level accountants who are swapping roles and companies, not because of the pay packet, which, you know, my generation, because my dad's generation would do it for another 12 grand a year. Like, it's not, that's what you work for, right? But are swapping because of other stuff. I think it's just becoming more relevant, regardless of the label you stick your generation on. I think people are becoming more woke to that, to use a street phrase.
Very street phrase.
Said woke on a podcast.
Wow.
Still got it.
Still going.
So, let's, shall we? That's a good chat.
I've cut a lot there.
Chat on brand. So let's finish off with our normal repartee of what brands have done well and what brands haven't, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, have you got any?
I want to go for something, you know. I keep thinking, keep going to these, gravitate to these big company names and things like that. One of the best brands for me, as you know, Tim, I'm a keen cyclist. You know, I haven't done any of it over the last few weeks, month or so, unlike our friend Paul Chapman. I saw did 200
cycles now, technically
213 miles in a day. That's just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. One of the best brands that I know of is five doors down from me, and it's my local bike shop.
Cool.
Langdale Lightweights. Customer service is unparalleled. You ask them to do something, they do it. They look after you, they're cheap. They're not just a bike shop, and I said this to him the other day, and I went on marketing on him, and I felt a little bit disgusted with myself afterwards. But I said to him, you're not just a bike shop for me. You're actually one of my cycling partners for life. Because I know anything goes wrong, I know they're going to help me. And do you know what? That's all I want in a brand, is reassurance. Somebody who's there to help me when I'm going to be in a time of need. And I will just buy from him forever now.
You see, there's, I know Nottingham, I'm from the same town you are, and it's, you know, there's, I know, I'm not into cycling, and I know a bunch of bike shops in that category.
Yeah.
And he's got to a point of the brand, like, being no other choice.
Yeah.
Like, literally. That's great branding. I'm going the other end of the scale with big TV focused brands, and I'm going the ones that has done something well is Bodyform, I think, recently. I don't know if you've seen it, but hashtag womb stories.
No, I haven't seen hashtag womb stories.
I've only seen it in the marketing press.
Okay,
because I like everybody else, I don't really watch TV adverts anymore. But they've built out a brand storytelling example, right? Which is why I've picked this one. They've bought out a good brand storytelling called hashtag womb stories, right? And it takes you through, as it says on the tin, the story of a womb, right? What happens in that lifetime experience, right? And how shows how Bodyformer empathize towards that and can help and position themselves along that journey, right? And whether it's super relevant to you or not, it is being plaudited by marketing people and the people in the trade as an award winner, right? When marketing have their own kind of marketing Oscars, and this is in for a run at it for all of you non-marketers out there. And it's just a beautiful piece of brand storytelling.
Because simple as well. How simple.
It's good, right? And it's powerful, and it makes you feel something like every good story. Even though me, like, I am definitely not Bodyform's ideal target audience, right? I'm not. If you don't know what Bodyform is, please Google it. I'm not explaining it. Just for danger reasons, if I'm honest, we don't want to be. In our career. But it's, please Google it. But it's.
I'm just reading it now on Twitter. So, Bodyform, the pleasure, the pain, the love, the hate, it's never simple. Our womb stories need to be shared and heard. Watch our film to find out more.
Yeah, it's that.
Makes me want to click.
That film, right? It's very, very good piece of brand storytelling. Bravo. Bravo, Bodyform.
Well done. Well done. One of the other ones that when I start thinking of large scale companies, the one that I do want to give an honourable mention to is Lego. Lego are phenomenal at brand. Absolutely phenomenal. But they do it slightly differently because they know they've got the heritage there. They know they've got a really good core customer base, but how do they keep that passing down through the new generations coming through? And the partnerships that they've created is just unparalleled. So they're now with Universal Records. You know, they've got the whole Marvel tie-in. They've got DC Universe. They are hitting massive target demographics through not only their own brand, but utilizing other people's brands at the same time. And I think that's super impressive the way they do that. One of my jobs for a while was to be a strategic partnerships manager. And I actually used the Lego mock-up with Marvel as my presentation in the interview to go, this is what true partnerships are. Lego, I mean, I follow them on if you don't follow them on LinkedIn, follow them on LinkedIn. Their posts are superb. They're always animated. The one that they just released on Universal Records was the bricks lighting up and going up and down like an equalizer, which just grabbed my attention straight away.
You know what? So good, Lego, right? I like what I'm going to frame as fan art to them. So not associated accounts of Lego, but definitely telling the Lego story. And my favorite one is a Twitter account called @ethicsinbricks. Right?
And they do Ethics in Bricks.
And they do little pictures of Lego, like, philosophy things like at Lego, at Ethics in Bricks, right? And the picture is somebody's made a little philosophical or teachable moment out of Lego and put an image on it and the appended quote, and it's beautiful. It's just my favourite thing.
I'm looking now.
And it's just good, right? And they've not commissioned that. It's not, I'm sure it's not endorsed, but bloody hell, does it tell the same story, right?
That is a genius account.
Like, it's honestly so good. Big up Twitter, mentioned twice in this podcast.
Whoop. Yeah, unbelievable.
Good times. Well, I think that brings us to the end, doesn't it?
Good times. Yeah, I think that's it for this episode on brand. Have we sorted brand?
I think so. I think we've given a good... The definition was easier to come by. Thanks, Matt Davis. Hat tip. And I think we've hopefully shown how the core tenets of brand kind of can work no matter what your context, no matter what size or business or industry or whatever. The core tenets of brand are exactly the same. And it's not just in the realms of the big boy, right? Yes, with Coca-Cola and Red Bull, the ability to scale through budget is different. But the thing they do, the work they do for brand is exactly the same as you can do.
And on that note,
that's it.
I think we'll close brand down.
Boom. Brand done.